aprenderás sobre la excitante industria de ingresos recurrentes con software, historias de fundadores de empresas de software, tips de internet marketing y recomendaciones de apps para crecer tu negocio. Soy Jorge Díaz y te doy la bienvenida al podcast de Software como Servicio. Hello and welcome to the Software como Servicio podcast. In this episode, we will talk in English because we have a guest that you will like. He has a lot of SaaS companies and a dev shop that develops SaaS businesses or software como servicio businesses. So his name is Jordi Wardman, and how are you? Welcome to the show, Jordi.
Thanks, Jorge. I'm doing great. I'm excited to do the show with you. I just wish I could do it in Spanish, but I can't. I would not subject your audience to my bad Spanish.
We have texted a little bit in Spanish, and you have a very good Spanish.
Yeah, thanks. But I just get shy when it comes to if somebody can speak English, I always like to. I just get shy with my Spanish.
No problem. And tell us what do you do first of all? What are your businesses?
Sure. So I have been an entrepreneur for about 15 years. I started five companies and I've sold three of them. The three were mostly in e-commerce. I sold three e-commerce sites. And now I'm basically all in software. So I have an agency, as you mentioned, and that agency is in .NET. And Node for the back end and Angular React for front end. And so all we do is we focus on SaaS companies. And then for my own companies, I have two software as a service, one that services the music, like music teachers, music academies. That's the dev shop. So the music review software is about 7 years old, and I don't really do anything with that. And that's just sort of runs in the background. I have a support guy that runs it, and I'm starting a new software as a service that finds leads for software agencies. So like myself, and I use it to find my leads.
Okay, this is the. Let me show the. This is the agency, right?
No, that's the software as a service for finding the leads for software development companies.
Can you talk about this one? It caught my eye when you showed it to me.
Yeah, so this one is something that I've been working on now for about over a year. It has machine learning. So basically, the way it started was I sold my e-commerce company, and I had some money that allowed. I live in Switzerland now, so it's quite expensive to live here. So I did sell my e-commerce company, and I had maybe 2 years to live in Switzerland. So I obviously had to start another company, and I started a software development agency, and. Yeah. There was problems with how we needed to find jobs. So I have like 45 developers. So, I need a lot of leads. And in order to find those leads, I built this software that basically listens on Twitter and, other Stack Overflow and some forums. And whenever somebody says, "Hey, does anyone know a good software development agency?" we get that notification, and then we write them an email saying, "Hey, I saw you posted on Twitter, or you posted on Stack Overflow, or LinkedIn, or whatever. I'm interested in helping you out." So that's where I get all of my leads now. So it's working really well. But I get so many leads. I'm getting like 4,000 leads a day from all over, like Ruby, Python. So since I'm just Node and .NET, there's a lot of leads like that I don't need. So I decided to make it into a service. And essentially, I'm just going with that. It's only maybe 2 or 3 months into it, but I've been working, developing the machine learning algorithms for over a year, and they're really good. They're like 96% accurate. So we're getting really good leads, and they're just now basically connecting to more sites. We're connecting to RFP sites, which is request for proposal. Let's say a town is saying we need help building, you know, our city, rebuilding our city's library database or something. We will submit a proposal for that. And yeah, it's going well. You know, it's hard to say this early on because I haven't really been approaching that many people, but it's working for me. So I know it can work for other people.
Yeah, this includes software, right?
Yes, that's right. It's software, and it's built in .NET, and it's so it's got the machine learning is in TensorFlow, so that's Python, and then we connect it with a REST API, and yeah, it's been going well.
That's very interesting. Yeah, it's because I was going to mention the trend that is going about productized services that you a service like web design, but you productize it and sell it like a SaaS or like a software como servicio, and you sell it like with plans, and you have like this plan includes these things, and you just click and you can buy the plan, and someone in the other side responds you, and it's a service, but it's more like a more automated and targeted way, like unlimited graphic design or unlimited leads for software developers.
That's right. And so one of the things recently someone told me about was that I was thinking like, okay, well, we're not going to do any service with this. It's only going to be a pure SaaS. But somebody told me that they have a funnel site. And they said, as soon as they switched to have some services, they tripled their sales. So I'm going to actually incorporate some services. And at this point in time, I don't really know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to manually do it in the beginning and then figure out how to automate it. And so I have my own SaaS podcast as well. And I've interviewed maybe 200 SaaS founders. And I would say that probably like out of the 200, I would say maybe 30 to 40 of them, what they did was they essentially started that way. So they said, okay, we don't really know how, you know, they start with a spreadsheet really. And so some of them say, you know, okay, yes, we can do that. And they do it in the back end, and then they figure out how to automate it. So that's essentially what I'm doing. So I took this idea from these people that I had interviewed for the podcast. Oh, you're on mute, George.
Oh, sorry.
There you go.
Can you share some of your favorite stories in your podcast?
Yeah, so I would say that the guy from Dover, I can't remember his name, but Dover.com was one of these SaaSes that did that. So these guys, they started maybe 2 years ago, and they started about 2 years ago, and from that they were from MIT, which is a really good school. They started programming something. What it does is it basically finds developers for you. So this is it's basically like a headhunter. So they started as a headhunter service. The nice thing about that is that they could charge like $3,000, you know, to find someone on a monthly basis. So manually, they can charge quite a lot. So what they did is they started to manually do this, and then what they did was basically automate everything about that. And so now, before COVID, they told me that their MRR was 40,000 monthly recurring, and just since COVID, they've grown that from 40,000 per month to 400,000 per month, and so obviously in 9 months they're growing very, very fast. And that the only reason they're doing that is because they have automated everything about recruiting, and so it scales very easily because everyone's always looking for hiring solutions, right? So it's a really good solution, and they've been able to build automated. They've got machine learning. They've got like chats, all kind of chat, you know, automated chats. And it's, so I would say that's probably one of my favorite stories. So taking that, that sort of idea of people were coming to them and say, hey, can you do this? And they were manually doing it. And then bit by bit, they were automating the parts that they were doing manual. So that's what I'm going to try and do with my SaaS.
Yeah, there's another example of mixing services with software as a service is a podcast, the podcast engine that I use. It's called Becast.
Okay.
And they have like a top on the top of the software, or where all the episodes show, like, Do you want to edit your podcast episode? And they just make it very easy, so you can upload your MP3 and they deliver that, and they provide you via an email. But they have like a podcast agency editing audio and podcast hosting.
Yes. Have you heard of Castos podcasting? Castos?
Yes, I have heard of that.
Okay, so they're another one that's like that. I interviewed him as well. So he's another one that essentially started. It's like a competitor to Libsyn or something, but they have a hosting platform. And what they do is they added a service component to it. And he said with that services component, he's able to grow the SaaS much faster. So, you know, it's not always that you can do SaaS. So, you know, software como servicio is, you know, everyone likes the idea of being able to automate it, but you can't always do that. So if you can add some service to it, you can actually end up building a nice business around it that way.
Yes, I completely agree. It's I haven't heard about this like mixing of services and software, but I think it's pretty new.
It is, and it's. I think people don't like to do it because they get worried that it's not as scalable. But I think what people find is that there's always some type of onboarding with a new customer, especially when the SaaS is early, right? I mean, maybe later you can automate everything, but in the beginning of your SaaS, it's good to have some manual touch points on the onboarding, because it makes the customer not churn, you know, especially early on. If they see like really good service, you know, they're likely to stay. And so that's why I like this model. And I'm going to go in, and it's going to, you know, obviously reduce my margins, but then I'll understand what the customer wants. And then anything that is repetitive, we'll obviously figure out how to automate. So it's a really good way to get in, get customer feedback, and be able to build, automate those features. Yeah, you're on mute again.
Sorry about that. Yeah, it will be a very big trend, I think, services and software. Well, it's software. It's selling like a service, but we are talking more specifically about having a software as a service and like a physical service, like graphic design or
Exactly, like many pixels or something like that. Well, many pixels, you know, these sorts of those sorts of platforms, they're heavy on the service side, right? But say a very good example is Drop Funnels, which is this guy that I got the idea from. The client, from their perspective, doesn't know what's happening behind the scenes, right? They're doing some of the things. They're, you know, sending emails or whatever, writing copy for the clients, but it's not so involved. So you're not getting that involved with many pixels, because I've used that before. There's a lot. It's basically like Fiverr or something like that, you know, where you're having very much a lot of interaction with the service provider. So that is not the one that I like, because you start running, you get heavy on the support side, you need to grow the team very large. But if you can do certain repetitive tasks and batch them, so like sending email could be done in, say, 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something. Designing graphics, you know, that is like a full-time job, you know?
Yes, or video editing.
Editing, not podcast editing, things like that.
Yes. Let's talk about your dev shop.
Okay.
What type of SaaS businesses have you developed? What is the specialty of your dev shop?
So the specialty is really, we like to get in at the MVP stage. You can see some of the clients there's like Wave and REI Blackbook was a real estate software as a service. Profit Drive is another one. The real estate, we seem to be getting quite a few leads from the real estate side of the industry, which is unusual. But we also, the reason that I like that model is because we can grow with the SaaS company, and it's more like permanent, it's more like full-time work. So we don't have to go out and find new projects all the time. The ones that, I mean, we'll do them for sure. Like if somebody comes to me with an app and it takes 4 months, you know, once that app is built, I have to go out and find, you know, those resources become available. And timing it perfectly with another job is difficult to do. That's why I like SaaS, is because they stay, they're long term. As the company grows, they need more developers, and so it's a good business model for a software agency.
And how many developers do you have now? Because I see in the footer like many countries.
Yeah, so we have about 45 wow. Developers.
That's a lot, and working remote.
Yeah, all remote. It's all remote. So we have daily stand-ups, maybe two times a week, and we have client meetings once a week. And sometimes I'm on them, and sometimes I'm not. And then I have a management meeting once a week. So for the most part, like it's not like, you know. And then we use Slack, so we're chatting in Slack most days. But we don't get on the phone that often. You know, it's scheduled, so it's not like it's that. You know, like it's organized. We use Jira to manage all the agile sprints, and it's pretty well organized.
And what do you think about? I have seen other agencies, like they sell you like the sprint, like, I don't know, $8,000, $10,000, like in 1 week you have like the design sprint and a validated idea. And then if you hire them for like develop the whole thing, like it's more like 20,000 per app, like iOS, 20,000 Android, 20,000 web, 20,000.
Yeah.
In that model, but what is your... Or what is the model that you think works best?
So for MVPs, we always like to give options. So for example, we'll say like, okay, let's say we're building a SaaS that has a mobile component. So we'll say, if you want to do mobile and you just want to do iOS, it'll be this amount. And so we recommend using React Native or Flutter or something that works for both iOS and Android. And so for the most part, we can build a React Native app, say, for 500 hours, right? But then to make it Android, it would only be by, 580 hours. So for the most part, for an additional 80 hours, they can say, okay, well, I may as well get both. Rather than if we did two native apps, it would be 1,000 hours. That's essentially how we quote it. And also, I usually ask a budget. I said, what do you want to spend? What can you really spend on this? And they say, let's say they say 10,000. And I says, okay, you'll have to create mockups. So they create the mockups and the user stories. We look at that. And then based on that, I say, okay, likely this app that you gave me is going to be, usually it's like 15 or 20,000, right? So, but if you want to get it in at 10,000, what we need to do is cut this piece, and this piece. And so I give them the options. And so they can look at it. If some of them are saying, okay, well, I'm going to go and raise some capital from friends and family or go talk to some angel investors, then they have options. They can show the investors that says, listen, this is my mockups. What can we raise? And if they're funding it themselves, then they will go for the real prototype, the slimmed down prototype. So I like to give the options. And we'll also help them, create mockups to show investors so they can have something that's like a clickable PDF. They can go and they can show and give a presentation. So it's in our interest to help them get the money so that they can come back and do the project with us. So we help as much as we can.
Yes. And what is the price of like an average MVP, the MVP?
I would say the average price for an MVP is probably like in the 13,000 to 15,000 range. And that's something, that's having me involved. We also have a code review guy that's based out of London. So we can adjust that too. Like, okay, if you don't want me involved and you don't want a code review guy, we can give you a better price. But for the most part, people are like, no, I want you involved. So it usually comes out. And in my opinion, something that if you can build an MVP for 15,000, I think it's a good start because you want to build something that it's like starting a business, right? So if you can start a business for 15,000, I think it's a good price. So what, that's like 300,000 pesos. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes, that's correct. 300,000 pesos.
Yeah.
Instead of like hiring developers here in Mexico for 30,000 or 25,000 pesos per month.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you say, whatever kind of business, it's like, I don't know, renting a place, not now because it's COVID.
Yeah.
But normally it's like renting a place, all the furniture, all the equipment. And 50K is nothing for a like very scalable business, right?
That's right, yeah.
And what do you think? Can you charge like upfront, like the 15K, just to, because?
No, so what I do is I ask for 30% down. So I do 30% down and then 30% sort of towards the end. And then the last bit at the end, right before we go live, I'll say, okay, if this is all good, let's square up. And then once the MVP is live, we always guarantee being on time and on budget. That helps. So it helps us make sure that we quote correctly. First of all, we have to be really good at quoting. And then second of all, it gives the stakeholder, gives them the security that they feel like they, okay, I know this isn't going to go over. And they like that. So it makes it pretty easy to close the deals.
That's great. I want to talk about web review and also that you have been living in Nayarit in Sayulita, right?
Like, yes, that's right. Sometime
in the past. Can you tell your story or your opinion or whatever about living in Mexico and Latin America?
Yes. So, in about 2010, I moved to Sayulita. I'm from Bermuda in the Caribbean, and I moved to Sayulita from Bermuda. We went and stayed a summer there. And in the beginning, we were just going there. I have two sons, they were out of school. So we went to Sayulita and we stayed for a summer. And just in the last week before we were going to go back to Bermuda, somebody said, oh, you should look at the school here. And so we went down to look at the school and we fell in love with the school. It's beautiful. There's like all kinds of like parrots up in the trees and it was in the jungle. It's really, really nice down there. So we went back to Bermuda and we basically figured out how we could move to Mexico. And so I actually had some work in Mexico. I was putting Wi-Fi stuff into hotels like in Puerto Vallarta and Nuevo and, Punta Mita. I had some work there. And so it was quite easy for me to move and live there and work there. So we moved there in 2010 and we stayed there until about 2015, I think. And we loved it. We surfed all the time. We drove around in golf carts and, ate all the great food down there. And the boys were in a bilingual school, but for the most part, they were mostly speaking Spanish. So they learned Spanish and yeah, it was great.
That's a great story. And talking about waves, can you talk about your software as a service? I think this was your first product before the shop, the development shop.
Yes. Yeah, so this actually started in 2013. It was for reviews for Latin American hotels, believe it or not. I had some partners and the partners, I wanted to stay very focused, right? So, but my partners are like, oh, well, this could work for everyone. So we got into Amazon, we got into spas, we got into the Latin American hotels, we tried the US hotels. But the problem was because everyone was so different, they all wanted different things. So I ended up buying the service from my partners about maybe 3 years ago. Actually, it was right before COVID hit. The revenues, it was pretty clear. They could see like, okay, COVID, the pandemic is here. We don't want to keep this running. So I bought it for them. I got a good deal. Like I made my money back in 2 months. And the first thing I did is I looked through and I did a study like where most of our customers were coming from. And we found out, oddly enough, that it was coming from music academies. So I just converted it over to music academies. And then I could start writing blogs just for music teachers. And it made it a lot easier to address the music teachers because they are, first of all, they're really nice people. They're easy to accommodate. And it works really well for them. And it's something that they need. And there's no competition in the music academy. There are some services that do it, but no one really just talks to them. So yeah, it's been a nice little, it got really destroyed by COVID, obviously, because the music teachers couldn't give lessons. And so they're sitting there for 9 months and they didn't need to be paying for the software. So a lot of them left, but they're starting to come back. And yeah, so it's been, you know, it's not really, I don't really work on it, but it's something, it's a nice thing. Like, you know, for example, you know, if I don't touch it for 6 months, I can go in and there's a good amount of money. And then what I've been doing is I just pull that money and I put it into crypto. You know, so once in a while when the market was down, I moved last week, the market, you know, went down 50%. I moved all my cash and I went and bought Ethereum.
Very intelligent.
Yeah.
Yeah, the crypto market is crazy. We can talk about that more in 10 minutes. But I am curious because I saw like the app is also in, Wave Review is also in Spanish. And I have been thinking that a lot of American companies, American software as a service, they don't focus, unless they are very big, they
laid
their whole website and their whole software to Spanish and other languages, but they are missing a lot of opportunity for Latin America, right?
Yeah, so the biggest thing about, I would say, about Latin America is that, as you say, there's a huge lack of competition. So if you can focus just on the Latino market, it's you know, like, it's cheaper to run Facebook ads. Like, I've talked to guys that run Facebook ads, and let's say the US market, you're paying, say, 30 cents per lead. In Latin America, you may pay 6 cents a lead. So the leads are much cheaper. There's a lot less, as you know, there's a lot less SaaS companies that service the Latin American market. And so there's definitely opportunity there. I think the reason that a lot of, you know, say of Americans don't do it is because they don't speak Spanish. And so they're not comfortable. So if you have the, you know, these bilingual guys like yourself, it's, you know, it's a really huge advantage. So we, for a long time, since we were servicing the Latin American hotels, we had bilingual support people. And so I still have a bilingual support guy. We still do have some hoteliers from Peru and, you know, Mexico. And it's just, it's not great right now because of COVID. But for the most part, it's a really good market. You obviously just need to be very comfortable in Spanish. The only thing that I will say is that you can't price as high. So the Latino market is more price sensitive. So for example, if you could charge 50 in the US, you're probably only going to be charged like 20 in the Latin American market. So it's a little bit difficult to, you know, sort of have a site where you charge, you know, US prices and then Latino prices. So you almost need to like focus on the Latino market, I think. You know, of course there's some big Latin American companies that will pay, you know, the hotels don't have a problem paying, you know, $50 or $100 for a service. But in general, the small businesses they won't pay as much as the US and Canadian prices.
Yes, I agree completely. And can you explain for $22 per month, what do they get with Wave Review?
Yeah, so this is basically what they get is 75. They basically have 75 customers that they can add to their database. So the idea is that if you're a small business, let's say you're a small music academy, right? I mean, it could even be like a boutique hotel, like a small Airbnb or something. But what they would do is, like, if you have 75 guests or 75 students coming through, you're allowed to send as many emails to them as you need. And of that 75, you should probably get, you know, 5 or 6 leaving you reviews. And so what we have found in music schools is that, let's say if you're in, say, Monterrey, or if you're in El Paso or something, or Miami, if you're a music store there, a music academy, if you're not doing anything with your reviews, if you're not asking for them, if you're not working on it, you're only going to get one or two reviews a year, because people just don't leave reviews. So if you are using our software, you and you go out to get reviews, you could probably get one or two a month. So that's a big advantage if you're in Google and somebody's looking for a music academy in Miami, and they come up and they search someone that's using our software that has, say, you know, 50 reviews, and then another one that has 4, they're going to go with the person that has 50 reviews. And the other thing is we somewhat filter people as well. So they're mostly going to be 4- and 5-star reviews. So the review ratings are going to be high, and there'll be a lot of them. So it's a really powerful marketing piece for them. And so I think it could be a really good service. I just don't focus on selling it that much. And it's just mostly it's just blog posts, people coming in and referrals. So it's just not growing that much.
Yes, but you have a you found the market. It's the most difficult thing I
think. Yeah, that's right.
So I want to talk about the story that you have, a story about selling when you were in Mexico, about selling salt, and also we are going to talk about how we met or have something in common, but that story is very interesting. I haven't heard it complete, so I want to hear it.
So at the time that I was doing this was probably about the same time we were in the foundation, which is a software as a service boot camp, I guess, to get you to build a SaaS, right? So I was in this boot camp, and it's when I started that Wave Review. So I basically, what I did for Wave Review was I was speaking to all the all of my Wi-Fi clients, which were hotels. I said, what is your biggest problem? And they said, oh, it's definitely reviews. So I went to them and I said, well, how bad of a problem is it? It's like, it's bad enough that I'll give you, you know, say $4,000 to help build this software if you can fix it. And so I collected maybe, say, $8,000 from customers that needed this software built. So that I knew that this software was going to be a success because, first of all, I had customers that were willing to pay me for it before it existed. And so that's how I took that $8,000 and I found a development team. We built a Wave Review, and it's essentially the same software that is in existence today. I've spent a lot more money on it since then, but I've used cash flow to pay for the software development. So using that idea, I also had a, you know, like the salt that you see on the side of the roads, I'm sure, like from Colima, right? So we had this, I had a friend who was like, hey, let's start this, you know, natural sea salt company and buy it from Colima and, you know, like the Fleur de Sal, and we'll sell it, you know, to like health influencers up in the U.S. And so he had a contact with a lady that had, like, say, an email list of, say, 500,000 people. And so we went and got a copywriter. He's really good. We paid a lot of money. But he basically put together maybe one landing page. So we paid $10,000 for this copywriter. But he took like a month, and he wrote like this huge long form sales form. And we showed it to this lady. And she's like, oh, this is great. I love it. So she sent it out to her list. We sent them to this sales page. And because her list was so big and because she endorsed it, we were able to sell like $90,000 in basically 4 days. And so we collected all that money. And at the time, we didn't have any salt. So we just wanted to see if it would work. And so we had things basically ready, but I mean, you can imagine, like, she's like, okay, I've sold $90,000 worth of salt and it's still down in Colima. So we had to go down, like I was like driving down to Colima. I was talking to the guy. We were helping, you know, load it up in the trucks and stuff. And then we had to cross the border, which is not something that we had a lot of experience doing. And so at the time, I had this guy who's, you know, like kind of was just getting going. And he was basically smuggled it across the border. And it was, he sent some pictures. It was like in the back of his pickup. And it was like, he had this like tarp over the salt. It was like all these cases of salt. And so we got it across the border. And once we sold it, you know, once we got it to the border, it was fine. We had some packaging that, you know, she was like, that's fine. You know, how much time do you need? And so I think we can do everything in a month. And so we were pretty close. By the time it was all done, maybe 5 weeks, but all the customers knew that she was telling them, okay, she was actually sending like, okay, your salt is crossing the border now. It was like this fun story. So she was like telling them all, we were like, oh yeah, here's the picture of, you know, the guy bringing it across the border. So we turned it into a fun story. And then when everyone got it, it basically launched the business, and the business ended up being very successful. And I ran it with my partner for, I believe he's still running. He ended up buying me out. And that was one of the e-commerce businesses that I sold. When I moved to Europe, it was very hard for me to do anything from Europe because of the time zone. So I ended up selling to him. But it was great fun. You know, he's still a friend of mine. And, you know, I think he's doing very well with it still. He ended up developing, you know, 5 other products. He does avocado oil and cacao seeds and things like that.
Wow, that's very interesting. It's like a mini Kickstarter, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is 2013. So it was really before Kickstarter existed. But I mean, there's no reason that anyone couldn't do something like this today. You know, if you have a contact with somebody that has a big list, there's so many great natural products that come out of Mexico. One of the ones that I tried to do that failed was a natural chocolate bar. So we had like cacao that, you know, I went over to Merida and tried to talk to the cacao farmers there. And I launched a product the same way, but it was in the summer. And unfortunately it was through Amazon, and when they would ship it, they would leave it outside. Like, so you can imagine somebody in Texas, and that they would come home to the Amazon package and the chocolate had melted. So it would be just like, open the box, and it was just like just this huge, because it was all natural. There was nothing, there was no stabilizers in it. So in the summer in Texas, it's, you know, 40 degrees or something, and it all melted. And so I closed that business down. I didn't lose any money, but I probably broke even on it. But it goes to show you just need to think about things like that. So the nice thing about salt is, of course, it doesn't melt or anything like that. So it's a good safe product.
Yes, that's a great advice, because maybe even I have heard an idea about like all the Mexican products, like sell them in the U.S. to U.S. Mexican citizens.
yeah.
Because of the nostalgia. Like a lot of opportunity in that kind of arbitrage, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I want to talk about the foundation and Dane Maxwell. Like, what did you learn about, like, what he teach and his businesses that now is the idea or the example that he put to us was paperless pipeline real estate transaction management, like all the papers from that industry in the cloud. Like Dropbox, but for an industry or a niche. And now I have seen that he launched my agent base, a real estate intranet software.
Yeah, that's right.
The importance of like reselling, what can you tell us about that?
So I would think the biggest thing that I learned from Dane was definitely the idea that you could pre-sell software. So I did it with WaiverView. Anytime that I can, I really try to pre-sell an idea, because it really gives you a huge advantage in knowing that when you launch this product, it's something that people really want, because they will pay for it before it exists. And the other thing is, people are like, oh, well, you can't do that. How could I sell something that doesn't exist? It's actually really easy. It's much easier to pre-sell because it doesn't exist yet. So you can make it do anything you want, right? So if somebody says, well, can you make it do that? It's like, yeah, of course I can do, you know. So it's much harder when the product exists and says, okay, well, this is how the product works. Is can you make it do that? No, it doesn't do that. So, So whenever people ask me, it's like, well, isn't that intimidating trying to sell something that doesn't exist? And I say, actually, no, it's easier to sell than when it exists. So, and the concept of pre-selling like a spec build, like a condo in, you know, down in Nayarit or wherever in Cancun or something is quite normal. People would say, okay, they see an architectural design and say, okay, this is going to be built to how you want it. And they pay up front, and then they fund the development, and then, you know, so it's quite a common idea. It's just nobody really uses that idea in the software space, and Dane was one of the only ones that I had heard using that, and it resonated with me and a number of other people. It was a really great course that we all took, and he was a great natural leader of this community, and we all had great fun with him. You know, he actually is still a friend of mine. I actually started to build an app for him, but he's one of these crazy guys. He had like four apps going, and one of them started taking off, so he stopped the one that was with me. But you know, that doesn't mean that I won't, you know, do some more business with him, but yeah, so he still runs these. He still runs that Start from Zero. I think it's a really good. It's a really good place for people that are interested in getting going in entrepreneurship. If I was just beginning, this is probably where I would go, because I think Start from Zero says it all. You know, you have nothing. He knows a lot about business. He's been doing it for, you know, 15 years or something. He's very successful now. He's got, you know, a SaaS company that's probably doing $3 million a year, you know, and all kinds of other businesses. So he's one of these guys that could start a business in a week. And so I think it's a really good resource.
Yeah, some of the ideas are like your salt idea, right?
yeah. They're crazy. He's got a lot going on, and he's still pretty involved. If you sign up to his email list, he's sending emails out all the time. He's doing hangouts. He's a really good mentor.
Yes, I agree. I went to Cancun to a
meetup or whatever.
A bootcamp pre-COVID. I don't remember.
It's probably like 2016 or something, right?
Yeah,
2017,
exactly.
Maybe.
And it was a blast because they were a lot of entrepreneurs from Mexico also.
Yeah.
And you make a lot of contacts, good networking. I want to ask you like one of the last questions, and we can end in crypto.
Okay, great. One of my favorites.
Yes. You don't have like the development or coding background, and you are not afraid about that topic and having a dev shop, right?
Right.
What can you say about that to teach people that don't be afraid about things you don't know?
That's right. So I, as you mentioned, I'm not really a software person at all. I'm more of a business salesperson. So my background is actually in forestry. So it's like science. And so I don't have any technical skills. I did some programming like way, way back, but it's so long ago that I don't even look at code anymore. So I would say that it should not be intimidating at all if you find a good technical co-founder, if you're sort of more on the business side or marketing, or you just want to be an entrepreneur. It's helpful to find a technical co-founder. You don't need one. You can go to dev shops. There's lots of great in Monterey has great technical talent down there. And in terms of crypto, my personal philosophy is I would rather hold crypto than like cash. So as a company, what I do is I take 10%. If a customer pays me an invoice, what I will do is I will immediately take that 10% and I convert it to Ethereum. And I've just been doing Ethereum now because I happen to like it, but maybe it would be BTC, another one that I like is Cardano. I'm doing some helium mining, which has been very good. So I'd like to have some exposure to crypto. And I'm a big believer. I think that personally, let's say, Cardano, for example, is at 150 right now. I started buying Cardano when it was at 2 cents. So, and it was a long time ago. I sold it, but the BTC I've kept. So I started buying BTC, in 2016. It was probably at 1200. It's now, whatever it's at, 35,000. Obviously I'm not selling. I plan to hold. I think it could reach 100,000. If it doesn't do it this year, it'll be next year or something. So to me, I'd like to have some. And if you buy along the way, it's not like, you don't get so emotional. Oh my God, well, I just bought last week. When BTC was at 60,000 US and now it's at 32,000, I lost all this money. It's like, I don't look at it that way. I just buy more at 32,000, so I'm keep buying. And so I'm buying along the way. And one of the biggest things that the biggest mistake that I made was when, all of these crypto, like 2 years ago when it was in the winter, they call it the crypto winter. After the big crash in 2018, I should have been buying in 2019, but I wasn't. So now I've made the commitment to myself that I'm going to buy a little bit all the time. Because I do, long term, I do believe that I would rather hold in crypto than cash.
Yes, like the example of Michael Saylor, right? MicroStrategy or Hope.
Can you
tell that story about that?
I know that only Michael is he's doing the same thing. I think, is that what he does? He converts to crypto. So he owns a lot. So MicroStrategies, is probably a SaaS company that's worth $500 million or something. And so he's got a lot of cash flow coming in. What he does is he does the same thing. So if he's doing, he's probably doing 10 million a month, he's converting 3 million every month to Bitcoin. And so I think he owns he owns a lot of Bitcoin. I don't remember what the amount is, but it's in the 100,000 Bitcoins or something. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah. He bought like $500 million and then he requested a loan of $500 million.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
he purchased $1 billion and he bought it in crypto.
That's right. Which is quite, obviously it's quite risky, but his strategy as well is that, okay, if I get this on a loan, I'm backing it with my company. The loan is at 2% or something. In 10 years, he's going to be ahead of 2%. That's what his strategy is. And, crypto, Bitcoin has been the best performing asset class in the last decade. It's appreciated some 3,500%, maybe even more. So chances are in the next 10 years, he's going to do better than that 2% loan. So it's either going to be crypto, Bitcoin's either going to be a million or it's going to be zero. So that's the way I look at it,
Yes, it's well, the good thing about MicroStrategy is that he bought that and now Bitcoin is in his balance sheet and the company, it's
yes, that's right,
because yeah, he owns Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think it's a very smart and that's essentially what I'm trying to do as well. I don't you know, I'm not taking a loan out, but you know, I now have a sizable position in crypto from doing this, so it's on the company balance sheet. And if I'm not converting to fiat, it's not taxable, right? It's just sitting there and it's accruing. But if I don't sell it, it's just on the balance sheet. So it's a company asset, and so I keep adding to it.
Yeah, I have a crazy story. A friend from Norway. He bought. Well, we talked with a friend of mine from Monterey that he's a Ethereum millionaire.
Okay, yeah.
And he told us Ethereum is going to be $300, and it was like 70 or something in the time frame. Then my friend went to Norway, took a loan or got a loan for like $20,000.
Yeah.
And he bought like a lot of Ethereum, and then it went to $300, and then $1,000. But he earned like 80K, and then paid the loan of 20K. It was a lot of risk, but
money. Yeah, you can, if you get in early and you time it right, you can do very well. I mean, crypto can double in a month, right? So if you took a loan out, you know, I wish that I would have maybe had done that like maybe a year ago when, say, Cardano was at, you know, it was at 10 cents and now it's at $1.50. It would have been really nice to have taken maybe a loan of 50,000 and bought Cardano, and then you could have paid that loan off in 3 months, right? So you would just be riding it. So so I'm going to, you know, I personally think that crypto is about halfway done of its, you know, of its bull run right now, because we haven't got to the point where it started going, you know, going like this, right? It's just been going flat. When it goes like this and everyone's buying it, that's probably when I would say, okay, well, I probably need to you know, take some profits here. And so I personally don't think that we're quite there yet. Yeah, Helium is a very interesting project. So I'm doing some mining with that.
Yeah, actually, I bought two miners. Like, they are going to arrive in August.
Okay, good. Yeah, it's very slow, isn't it? You buy them, and I bought some in February, and they're just arriving like now, you know? It's very slow.
Yes, and the thing is that in Mexico, there's a virgin market. So
yeah,
I think... I was thinking of talking about this topic in the podcast, but I was like, no, I'm going to keep this to myself.
But yeah.
Now it's open to the public.
Yeah.
Everybody in Mexico buy a Helium miner.
Yeah.
No, but let's explain a little bit how it works, because I tell them, my friends, and they... At the beginning, they say, is this a scam or something?
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. In Switzerland, it was a virgin market. I mean, because this is a new project. It really only came out in September, right? So it's only, you know, less than a year old. But so in Switzerland, a guy said, I'd like to put in a unit in your house, and I'll give you 20%. And I was like, okay, that's fine. He's a friend of mine. And so I was like, sure, I'll put it in my house. So he put it in my house and he sent me my first payment. And I looked online and I saw the unit is say $400, right? He sent me my first payment, and let's say it was like probably 75, HNT, Helium, whatever it is. So at the time when I first got it, it was like $2. So he said, well, you know, in a month, he's going to make his money back, you know, in 2 months or something. Then as the Helium price started going up, it was like, $3, it was $7. now he's sending me, you know, like 50 heliums, and it's worth, to me, it's like worth like $2,000 or something. So he must be making like $5,000, you know, from this one unit. So it cost him $400, and he's making like probably $4,000 or $5,000 a month off of this thing. And he's, what he did was very smart. He started buying in October and November, and started sending them out all over to people like me, and was giving them 20%. So I think that he said he has maybe like 90 boxes out. So you can only imagine he must be doing at least 50,000 a month off of these things. So he's doing very well.
That's in Switzerland?
Yeah, that's in Switzerland. Now he's got some in France. He actually has some, he sent to some friends in the US. So he's doing it all over, yeah. And I'm trying to do that, but they're just so slow that they haven't arrived yet. So I've got like maybe 12 coming, and I've got people that they can go out to, but they're so backlogged because everyone's sort of catching on now that you order and it takes like 5 months to get it.
Yes, that's the only problem. Also, but I don't know if, I think they do the pre-sale mold, right?
They get, yeah, that's right. I think you're right. That's right. They do that, and they say, okay, we've just got a 100,000 units or whatever. Now we have to build them. And I think that's what it is, yeah.
They are smart.
Yeah, so they're not carrying any inventory. I think now that they know, they pretty much know that the demand is going up.
But maybe this is a model that Helium wants to be like this, something like Bitcoin miners, that they are very difficult to create, or the chip is very specific for that task.
Yeah. I think that the big difference with the Helium is that, first of all, it doesn't use that much energy, right? So you're not trying to solve these complex algorithms. All you need to do is ping to another unit. So when I talk to the support, it doesn't really work if you have it, like, let's say there's no units in, say, in the middle of somewhere in Mexico, right? It has to be able to ping to another unit. So you need to have like two or three. And so you can see, as you can see in that, Europe is very saturated, but say Mexico is not. So if you can get some units going in, see, there's, it looks like there's some all the way down, maybe around like what's that, Puebla, and down, and there's some in Mexico City, it looks,
it's
like
Cuernavaca.
Yeah, Cuernavaca, that's right. Yeah. But yeah, there's not much going on in Mexico, so lots of opportunity there.
Yes, but like this kind of business, like, we are entering into a new era, because if you explain this to a Mexican investor or something like that, they don't understand it.
Yeah. Well, and it's difficult too, because if you give it to somebody and they see how much money you're making off of it, there's nothing stopping them from saying, well, I'm going to change this box and make the heliums come to me. So you have to have a contract. You have to trust the people. So that's why when I did it, I only got 12, and it's going to be with friends. It's not going to be a business for me. And this is similar to the Wi-Fi business that I did in Puerto Vallarta. I don't really like paying for hardware and putting it into somebody else's house. I have no control. When the hardware goes down, it's my responsibility. But I think it is a good side business. It's not going to be a business that I'm going to go in full bore, you know, but I think there's definitely opportunity. I'm giving some to my son so they can have some money to spend at school and things like that, you know?
Yes. This is a miner in Cuernavaca, whatever. Yeah. And he's earning 320 heliums per month.
Yeah, so do the math on that. What's helium now? Is that 14 or something? So, it's good money.
Let me check. $13?
Yeah, I said $13, I think.
It's $4,160.
Yeah, so there you go. From a unit that costs $400, he's making that back in a few days, you know. He's making his money. When you can find a business where you're getting ROI in days, I mean, you need to jump on that.
Yes. The question that I have about like the model of like sending it to your friends,
yeah,
like how many friends do your contact has?
Yeah, that's right.
Or it's just random people that
he... No, I'm not going to do random people. It's going to be people that I trust and know that not going to rip me off. But I mean, my friend is doing it. He has a contract. So he's, you know, he makes them sign a contract. You know, of course, I think if you did the math on it, most people are honest, I think. And if you're paying them, they don't care. You know, they're not technical. They don't want to get involved with this. If you're sending them money every month, if they're like, fine, it costs them nothing. They just turn it on. You know, it's, you get a couple $100 a month, and it helps them pay their electric bill. It's like a light bulb or something. It uses like $5 a month in electricity. It's like a wireless, you know, like your Wi-Fi modem or something. It's just a little small little thing like that. So I think it's, you know, it's low risk. I don't know how long this is last. I would be surprised, you know, if in 2 years, it's dead. But in 2 years, you can make some good money, you know.
Yes, exactly. And it's like 80,000 pesos per month.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. You can start a SaaS. You can use that to fund a SaaS.
Yeah, or convert it to Ethereum or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, and, exactly.
And what I was going to ask you, do you use like special antennas or something like that? Like,
no, it just comes with one antenna. He told me that I was supposed to put it by the window, and I never did that. I just stuffed it into like a bookshelf, and it can communicate with all the APs, so it's fine.
That's very interesting. The helium.com, you can check it out.
Yeah.
I think this ending is perfect for the podcast. I think everybody got a lot of value from this because
yeah.
We talked about crypto, SaaS, services, salt.
That's right. Pre-selling. And pre-selling. I think, Helium's going to get a nice little bump. Everyone's running to the website saying, oh, andale pues.
Yeah, me and my friends, we bought like, I think 60 or 70.
You did, really? Yeah. You bought 60 of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I got two, but. Yeah. My other friends got crazy.
yeah. That's. I think it could be very interesting.
Yes, we want to dominate Mexico.
Well, I think, you know, honestly, I bought some helium. I sold. I had gold and stuff, so I sold my gold. Amazon. I bought helium because I actually think that it could go to 100 because there's a huge network effect, right? I mean, there's so many people buying that the backlog is 5 months. So that's going to catch up, you know, and as that catches up, the value of helium is just going to go up and up. So I think helium is at 13 now. I've watched some of these coins, you know, Binance. I had Binance at 7 and last week, 2 weeks ago, it was at 600. So, you know, helium being at 13, it's really only 9 months old. In 2 years, this could easily be $100 coin, I think, you know.
And I think maybe you can mine like two heliums per month or three heliums, but they are going to be $100.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, well, thank you for being here in the Software Como Servicio podcast.
You
gave a lot of value, and thank you for it. Where can people contact you or order a SaaS VP?
I would say go to my website, onestopdevshop.com. Let me know if you have any questions about anything that we spoke about. I would love to hear from you. We can bounce around SaaS ideas, or I can help you out. I can do whatever you guys need.
Thank you very much, and see you in the next one. And bye to the audience.
Okay, gracias. Saludos.
Gracias. Hasta luego.